Okay.
All right, so today is May 1st, Sunday, May 1st, 2022, and we are reading from the sealed book. And we are in getting close to the end, Acts of the Three Nephites, chapter 14. I believe we are on verse 5. And so just to recap a little bit, we talked a little bit about priesthood and grace. And good sentiments, and how important these good sentiments are to helping us learn how to use the powers of the priesthood and grace. And then this allegory that we were getting into is the olive tree allegory, and it is just so beautiful. And I believe verse 5 is when we basically start the allegory. And this allegory was given to Zenas. And then it was repeated by, I believe, Jacob in the Book of Mormon. And now it's repeated by Jonas, who wrote Acts of the Three Nephites in this in the sealed Book of Mormon. So let's go ahead and start with verse 5. And can I get a volunteer or someone who'd like to read verse 5?
I can read it.
Okay, Russell, will you read 5?
Behold, the olive tree symbolically represents the people of God from the beginning of times, for it grows and produces fruit even on soils with little water, and even though it cut, if cut at the base of its trunk, it has a vitality to regenerate itself again from its roots. And although an olive tree is immersed for many days under the waters of a flood, it tends to survive. And after the waters subside, continues to produce fruits in abundance as if nothing had suffocated its branches. Remember that it was a leaf of an olive tree that the dove brought to Noah at the end of the flood.
Okay. First of all, I noticed a few changes. What version are you reading? Are you reading online?
I'm reading my own version. I'm sorry. There were some things that I was, which made me wonder what it meant, and so I did a translation from the Portuguese and created my own version. I'm sorry, I didn't think that it would have been affect these verses here yet, but yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, that's kind of cool. It only changed it just a little bit. So
Yeah.
the basic premise was the same. But that's cool. I'm glad you're making it fit you, Russell. That's awesome. And if there's anything that's significantly different between the version in the yellow book and what you've translated from Portuguese, I hope you'll speak up. And
Okay, I'll let you know.
yeah. Okay. So are there any thoughts about this first verse?
I took it to be like a kind of an explanation as to the resilience of the olive tree and of all the different things it can experience and still live, which seems to be something that other trees don't do, but it also speaks to the spirit of humankind.
Yes. Well, I was going to bring that up, so you took the words right out of my mouth that it is yeah, so it's the olive tree represents us. We are the people of God, and that we are resilient. And so that's a very, very important point that we are survivors. And that even when we are cut down or transplanted or changed, that we can always regenerate and regrow into something beautiful. Any other thoughts on verse 5? Another thing I want to make note of, or is make mention of, is that the allegory of the olive tree is in chronological order. And so it starts at the beginning of time and it goes throughout time. So keep that in mind as we figure out where we are on in this allegory. All right, Steve, will you read verse 6, please?
I'm glad to. And if it were not enough, all their resistance to survive in critical and adverse situations, when grafted branches of a grafted olive tree to a good olive tree, it is able to make them into good olive trees again, so that they are replanted as branches of good olives again.
All right, does anyone have a comment on that?
This is Bob. If I'm coming across okay.
Yes, it's a little soft, but we can hear you.
Okay, this verse is the part I wanted to comment on was resistance to survive in critical and adverse situations. That describes the church today from what I can see. Absolutely. It's, if you look at any way you look at the church, whether it's the scattered condition of the restoration branches or the even the conditions in local branches, it seems like this is the situation we're encountering, that that there's violence what taketh it by force, that we're really up against some adverse situations. But nevertheless, it talks about being made into good olive trees again. And so we are in a period of hardship, I would think. But the important thing is, as God has told us in the sealed book, is that the church must exist always in its pure form in our hearts. And so, and I think that's what happens to the olive tree. Even though it has gone through all these adverse conditions, it's got its innate ability to regenerate. And like was said, as Sister Lisa said in the other comments, that that's what sort of like the adverse situations sort of allow the tree to do its thing. And it really, when it comes out of this, it's like a better tree. It's like a new tree. So anyway, so much for what it's worth.
Thank you. And I get excited about this because my son learned to propagate and graft trees when he was 8. And he was so excited to take wood from this variety of apple and graft it onto a tree of a different variety at my brother's house and have that old wood produce a different kind of fruit than the rootstock of my brother's tree. And the thing that's fascinating about grafting is if you were to plant an olive tree by seed, it will take you easily 5 to 12 years to produce fruit, to have wood on that tree growing from seed to produce fruit. But when you graft old wood that is already fruit bearing onto a tree, any tree of its kind, it can produce fruit the very next year. So with my mulberry trees, I've grafted old wood. I cut it off, made a rootstock, put it in rooting compound, planted it in the ground. And that year it produced mulberries in the fall when I did that in the spring. So I find these things absolutely fascinating in how a real application in my mind shows that we are taking from this tree, fruit producing and put on this tree, and we are able to produce good fruit even on a bad stock. You know, so just thinking about taking and grafting things really puts things into perspective when you're thinking about what are we doing. We can produce fruit so much faster being grafted than new ones being planted. So Heavenly Father doesn't need to bring up new seed and start a whole new vineyard. he's grafting for a wise purpose. And I just think that's fun to think about.
That's really neat. Let me see if I understand this correctly. I think what it's telling me is if I take a branch and graft it into the good olive tree, that then I can take that branch and plant it and it will be good olive tree. Is that a correct understanding of what that's saying?
There's several ways to propagate old wood or a budding.
I'm just trying to figure out if that's what this verse is telling me, because it says that it seems like it's saying that even after I've grafted it in, I can then take it and make a new tree. It's good.
The way that you can is by air layering. You take off that cambium, the outer layer, and wrap it in peat moss and then aluminum foil and saran wrap. And then once that's rooted out, you clip it off the tree and it has roots and you plant it right in the ground and it's already budding and flowing and growing and you have a full tree producing fruit that year instead of waiting 5 to 12 as well.
So as the verse is telling me, I think you can take a bad olive, graft it into the good tree, and then you can take that bad olive, there was bad, which is now good, and plant it elsewhere and it'll be a good olive tree. Am I reading that incorrectly?
Well, I don't, it doesn't flow for me that if you take a bad branch and put it somewhere else, it's going to be turned into a good branch.
This is all of.
That's what I'm reading, Russell.
Yeah.
But I also, so if we were to think of the tree as being people, if you take a person or two or three or whatever, you submerge them into a group of people that are righteous and love the Lord, and that's their behavior. And that behavior is going to rub off on to the other, the ones that have come in. And if they don't like it, they'll leave, I suppose. But in most cases, you kind of are assimilated into the group. If you're into a good group, you're going to be doing good things. Maybe that's a way to look at it.
Can I make a comment? So the reason I wasn't here last week is I went to church with my parents. And you know what? It was good. It was a good experience. It reminded me about how these people are really good people in the LDS church. They are. They're seeking righteousness. They have good hearts. They're serving one another. You know, and like you made a comment earlier, Lisa, I really miss singing. It was just wonderful to sing with all these believers, you know, and, everyone was so kind and so, you know, inviting and, you know, they were so excited to see me there and they're inviting me to like Relief Society activities and everything. And to me, this, I don't know that it's bad that you can take bad wood or bad people, but to me, it's more about prepared people, you know? And to me, I have a hope and belief that at some point, and we're in the beginning of sharing that the people that have already accepted the Book of Mormon are the people that I think can be grafted in to understand and accept the sealed book. You know, that's my hope and my belief. So anyway, that's just my comment.
So Russell, where in verse 6 does it say that you're taking bad wood and then it grafts in and then it can be good again? It says good again.
Yeah, let me see if I can understand.
But it doesn't say that they're bad, right?
When grafted branches are grafted of a grafted olive tree into a good olive tree, that implies to me that it wasn't a good one when it was grafted in. But it was grafted in.
Bad isn't the only option. It could be non-producing, but it doesn't mean it's bad or bitter.
Bad isn't, but then it was able to make them into a good olive tree again. And so that implies that it wasn't before it was made into. So before then, it wasn't a good olive branch before it got grafted in, is what I read from that.
And that could also just refer to our lost and fallen state that we live in. And that once we're grafted into the good olive tree or into the gospel, then we can become good again. So there's a lot of layers to this.
Yeah. And
we'll go through.
There's good, bad, and neutral. There's many variations between good and bad. And if something isn't producing, I wouldn't consider that bad. But when the creation took place in Genesis and God said it was good, good to me means it's producing, it's performing its function that it was designed to perform. And so once this tree was grafted in, it was good again. So to me, it seems like then it's producing and performing its proper function with its stewardship, and what it was designed to do in producing fruit. It has those nutrients from the rootstock in the tree that it was grafted into. Just like with the things that we are partaking of, we are grafted into what's happening in Brazil and producing good fruit because our wood has already produced in the past.
Awesome. Thanks, Darla. Hey, Darla, will you read verse 7? We'll just keep going here.
Of course. For this reason, I and my father compared the house of Israel to all those who make up the church of the Lamb of God, of Lamb, to a good and leafy olive tree, which the Lord of the vineyard planted next to water currents for the purpose of producing fruits according to its season, whose leaves would never wither.
Yeah, and I changed water currents to streams of water.
Okay. Well, I think we should read the footnote, Psalms 1:3. Russell, can you pull that up for us, please?
Hang on 1 second.
Okay. And then once again, it says that they're comparing the house of Israel to all those who make up the church of the Lamb, to a good and leafy olive tree. So,
and here's Psalms. Okay. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper.
So I take this to mean that if we stay close to the water or the good fillings and the good currents, we won't wither. And does anyone else have something they want to add to this? It's going to go on to talk more about these water currents in the next few verses.
I would agree with that. Cause I mean, isn't Christ symbolic of, you know, the living waters of Christ to come and partake? You know, so that makes sense to me that's what that's meaning.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, it sounds so lovely and promising. The Lord's vineyard planted next to water currents for the purpose of producing fruits. That's the purpose, producing fruits according to its season, whose leaves would never wither. You know, and it's fun to think, oh, we're so promised that our leaves will never wither. But what happens to the fruit? It's not like, oh, look, we have this delicious peach, let's eat it. If you look into the process of producing olive oil from the fruit, it's torture, man. You're put in a freaking press it is tedious what must transform an olive into olive oil. So as we think about our trials and tribulations, and we're in the thick of it, it's fun to think, not fun, but it keeps my sanity to remember that, yes, this is part of what I signed up for. I am being pressed and purified to bring forth this oil that is the things that our body needs to sustain life, is we need those essential fatty acids. And to create, not only do we have good fruit, but to make that fruit beneficial for our body in this allegory with an olive tree, there is a refining process. And that refining process is not comfortable. So I love that he didn't say, and there's these glorious cherries for you to just go and pick and eat, and life is lovely. So I'm grateful that it's an olive tree allegory.
Interesting thought. I like that.
Darla, that made me think of the oil in the virgin's lamps. How hard it is to make olive oil. Yeah. Just a thought.
Drop by drop. All right, let's learn a little bit more.
Okay, I have a comment.
Yes, go ahead, Dewey. Yes.
You know, one of the things that I find really interesting about olive oil is some of the oldest people in the world consume large amounts of olive oil, and they've linked it to health. I know we realize that the oil is the spirit of God and the love of God,
and the light.
And the light, yes. I've been trying to take olive oil twice a day now because of it has a powerful antioxidant in it for your own personal health. And I know that, anyway, I just find that interesting that they use this olive is so important that they would represent life, light, the gospel in olive trees. And I'm done.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Suzanne, do you want to read verse 8, please?
Sure. I'd love to. And now, to what shall I compare these water currents? To the good feelings derived from the gift of God, which flows along with the other sentiments derived from the love of God among the covenant people that persists in observing my commandments. Beautiful, just really straightforward.
Mm-hmm. I like in the allegory, we're getting these great interpretations that we kind of missed in Jacob when we first heard the allegory. But now we know that the water currents are the good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think, you know, it's so important not to dismiss our feelings, you know, because that is, I believe, God's way that he communicates with us a lot is through our feelings and our, you know, yeah. And then again, it talks about the love of God. So again, it's always coming back to the love and the love that we should have in our hearts and the love that God has for us.
Yeah, Suzanne, that makes sense. So Lisa, you said the good feelings, that the water is the good feelings. You can turn that around and say the good feelings is the water that sustains the olive tree, that the good feelings in our heart is what sustains us and brings forth our good fruit to show to the Lord.
And the last two words or three, observing my commandments, along with that genie, that not only are we having the good feelings, but we're also being obedient and following the commandments of God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, yeah, it's the good feelings come from God, but also the sentiments. Like, this is interesting. Yeah, because it says the other sentiments derived from the love of God among the covenant people that persist in observing my commandments. So I'm wondering if it's kind of like a cycle of flowing water. I don't know.
Something. Well, I think it is, like, in our lives, you know, like when we do good, then we have the good feelings, and then it motivates us to be more loving. So then we're behaving more like God. Right. And then, you know, I just remember earlier in my life when, I had gone through a lot of things and I truly, truly needed the atonement in my life. And I just remember feeling so much love and grace and just overwhelmingly love and just like gratitude for the fact that like that my sins had been paid for. And I just was so overwhelmed by like, how can I ever repay that? Like, there's no way I can ever repay that. But what came to me is that the little amount, the little thing that I can do is I can persist in observing the commandments. You know, I can strive to keep the commandments, and that is how I can try in my little humble, pathetic way to show my gratitude. So, you know, it is like a flowing circle. And I love symbolisms. I love allegories. And, you know, I'm writing a children's book right now that has an allegory, and a song that I wrote like a couple of years ago has an allegory in it. So I love the, you know, it's just so beautiful. Obviously, it's going to be beautiful because of God's writings.
Yes, thank you. All right, should we move on to verse 9? Jeannie, will you read verse 9 for us?
Okay. But as it is written in the dream of my servant Lehi, these waters came from a spring near the tree of life, where the people of God must arrive and delight with their fruits, provided they remain firmly grasped to the rod of iron, which will lead them, according to the words of Nephi, unto the fountains of living waters. That is, to the tree of life from which it proceeds its water source, which are symbols of the love of God, yea, from this greater gift of which I have spoken to you, whence proceed all the good sentiments of my gospel.
Hello, this is Bob.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
This particular verse reminds me of the fact that in this whole parable, there's one thing that stood out to me, and that's that the roots never died. That was the whole point of the parable, that the tree withered, yet the roots remained good and viable. And it seems to me that the root, in our case, is Jesus Christ in our life, and that is how we can obtain life, is activate that power within our beings. You know, back in Corinthians, can I read just a couple of Bible verses? It says in Corinthians 5:21, it says, "For he hath made him to be sin for us who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him." And that the only way that we can be righteous is to take upon the righteousness of Christ, is one point through all this I wanted to make. And then another one is in, let me see if I can pull it up quickly, is in John chapter 15. I'm getting there if I can find John. It says here right at the beginning, it talks about the tree and the fruit. And when we're reading this parable, I want you to think about this verse, if you would, and how it might be applying even to the good branches, it's parts of it anyway. It says that in verse 2, chapter 15 of John, verse 2. Okay, John 15, verse 2. "Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth, that it may bring forth more fruit." So both the good and the bad are purged, or pruned, if you will, but for different reasons. The bad is taken away, but the good is purged so it would bear more fruit. Those are my thoughts.
I love that. And when I think of what you said, when the tree withered, but in verse 5 and 9, I don't see where it said withered, but the tree was cut off at the foot of the trunk. And that's important, because there were these cratom trees I was growing. I had 6 of them for 5 years, day and night, required constant attention and care. And when I got sick, they did not get the care that they were used to, and they did wither and die. but I have fig trees, olive trees, mesquite trees that I've watched people cut at the base to where there is stubble in the ground. And these things, what are the vitality? It has vitality to regenerate. So when I think of that, I think of people cutting the Brazilian church down to the trunk. You know, that's what had to happen with what Joseph Smith brought about, what the True Blue LDS Church has instituted. It had to be cut off from the bottom and started over to regenerate. And it has the vitality to grow from nothing. Because usually if you take the leaves away, the tree dies. It cannot do anything. But certain trees have the vitality to continue from nothing but the roots. And so that's important to think of that strength, as Brother Cackler is pointing out. So that's imperative for us to keep in mind as we move forward, that we are blessed with that vitality to bring forth these things during this time of famine, of starvation, of whatever comes our way.
Well, I think this allegory, it's easier to see, I think, in the Book of Mormon than the sealed book. It's an allegory of history. What I mean by that is the trees were literally cut off in the Assyrians in 700 BC, came and just swept through and wiped out all of the olive trees. And then it talks about how they kind of regenerated. And then it talks about in our day where there the trees aren't producing any fruit, any good fruit, any good feelings. And then it talks about the Lord talks to his servant and says, go call other servants, the 144,000. And then they go out and kind of rebuild the whole vineyard. So this this thing is kind of a whole sweeping thing over our whole history. But the coolest thing is that we're just in the very end of it when the what I call the Davidic servant. But anyway, the Lord says to his servant, go out, call the 144,000, then go out into the world and see if we can produce good fruit again. And we're just in the beginning of that. And I know we're in the beginning of this parable where I'm kind of talking about the very end of it. But it is a sweeping thing where it shows where they've been harvested. I mean, the whole world was harvested twice, and now we're at the final harvest, final planting, final gathering, and that's all about to happen in our day. And I'll pass.
Well, that ties right into verse 10.
Before we go on, I want to ask Brother Cackler if he would give me that quote in Corinthians, which quote was that? I didn't follow.
Yes, that's Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21.
That's 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians?
Well, that's a good question. It's either, I think it's 2 Corinthians, but it might be 1 Corinthians.
Oh, yeah, it must be 2 Corinthians because
5:21.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
I had another
question also for Bob. Isn't the women's organization called the Fountain of Living Waters?
Yes, and the president was mm-hmm. here, but she just stepped aside. Yes, it is. It's called, I think they settled on fountains, plural.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fountains?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Of living waters?
Fountain of the waters is plural, of living waters, but I think it's fountains. No,
because it just has that. It has that in this verse. In verse nine, it just says that the fountains of living waters.
Yeah, I'm not qualified to speak on that, but anyway.
Okay.
I'm a little qualified.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I thought at first we thought it was fountains with an S, but I believe Mauricio has corrected it to just be one fountain.
Oh, okay. So fountain
of living waters. Now that's my current understanding. That could change. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I just thought it was interesting because then, in that verse, it says that, that is to the tree of life from which it proceedeth its water source, which are a symbol of the love of God. So again, it's always, always going back to love. It's always about the heart, always about the love. Anyway, so I'd like to kind of, at some point, I would love to know more kind of the history behind that and where that name came from. And yeah, so thank you.
Is it okay if I read 1 Nephi 11:25 says, "And it came to pass that I beheld that the rod of iron, which my father had seen, was the word of God, which led to the fountain of living waters, or to the tree of life, which waters are a representation of the love of God. And I also beheld that the tree of life was a representation of the love of God."
Thank you. I was just going to say that too, that connection that we get between the two, I don't know if they're both parables or allegories, but yeah, the story in Nephi with the tree of life and the living waters, it's all connected to this, to this parable. So does that mean the tree of life is an olive tree? Does anyone have a thought on that?
Well, when Nephi and Lehi went to the tree, I mean, it was almost like, to me, a symbol that, they actually broke the veil and spoke to Christ and felt his love and felt his perfection and was in his presence in the, the brightness and the whiteness of the tree. And I think one of the cool things about the sealed book is it's showing us how to get there, how to actually arrive at the tree by these feelings, by these correct feelings, and correcting ourselves when we're not feeling correct. But I see it as just going as a progression all the way into the kingdom. First the Savior will come to you, and then if you get farther and farther, you'll go to them. You'll go up in the celestial kingdom. So I kind of see, and there have been some artists that showed that where the tree of life kind of, would go up into heaven. So I see it as, having an interview with Christ, but I couldn't do that without having the love of Christ and my fellow man and perfection. I couldn't have that until I had obtained the fruit and actually was demonstrating that live fruit myself in my life. And anyway, it's just some of the things that I consider in the allegory. I'll pass.
Thanks, Dewey. I think let's move on to verse 10 and talk a little bit more about these fruits or these fillings. JT, are you able to read? Good morning. Are you able to read right now? So we can't hear you, JT. You're not muted, but we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Not really. It needs to be louder.
Yeah. You gotta have somebody else read. My connection is pretty poor right now.
Yeah, it's really soft. Okay. All right. Well, we're glad you're here. Let's see whose turn. Who has not read? Suzanne? Oh, you read. Dewey. Dewey, do you want to read verse 10?
You bet. Nonetheless, the roots of the good olive tree, which is the house of Israel, stretched under the slopes of the river, where its waters were already mingled with impurity, symbolically representing the sentiments created by Satan, by whose priestly wiles he cast his gifts just below the source of God's gifts. And he came to defile his leafy olive trees, so that his roots, spun on the slopes of this river of filthy water, seen by Lehi, began to absorb the impurities from the evil one. And its fruit, which are the feelings of the people who make up the house of Israel, because they were so distracted by other things, they did not perceive the filth of the water that was absorbed by the seed in their hearts, and being the depths of hell to involve them in the senses. And thus the good olive tree grew and grew in its field, that is, among the nations of the world. I wanted to make a comment that it is really easy to, I was thinking, when we're all the things that we can absorb in this world, I was just thinking about that you can become worldly and love your car and your home and your education, and hence not obtain the love of God, not get the correct nourishment. You know, you're nourishing your tree with the love of things. I was thinking there are many are called, but few are chosen. And why are they not chosen? Well, because of the things of the world. You know, all of a sudden God becomes third place or fourth place in your life, and you just cannot get absorb the love of God and the power when you don't have the correct God is first, the love of man is second. You know, if you don't have the right priorities, it's very hard to bring forth good fruit. And I'll pass.
I think this is, I really, at first, when I first read this verse and learned that the fruits were feelings, I remember just being like, oh, they're not, they're the actions, you know, because that's in the LDS church. You know, we're taught that it's the actions that we do, the good fruits we produce. But, and I think action has some part to do with it, but our feelings are what is more important, and that's the fruit. The fruit is really the feelings. And I just think this is so sneaky of the devil to take the good thoughts. Like, I think of this river rushing from the tree of life, going down, and we're trying to grab into, or trying as trees ourselves, we're trying to get our roots into this good water. And then here comes Satan casting wickedness, his own stream of wickedness down along, right intermingled with that good water. And so we are really, you know, we've got all these bad feelings coming right at us along with the good. And so it's really important that we not focus on that filthy water and suck up the good water into our lives and into our hearts. So it's just a really good, I just love this verse because it's so vital for us right now. Russell, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I was curious if I can understand this. The tree is planted by the fountain of living waters, and yet there's this filthy waters. Is it on both sides of the tree? One side has the good waters, one side has the filthy waters. Where did the filthy waters come from?
Well, it says they come from Satan.
I know that, but I mean,
And then
I'm trying to visualize.
He says he casts, what does it say? He casts them, is it below or above? What does he say there?
Below.
Oh. Okay. So he's, at first I thought, you know, in my mind, I was trying to imagine it just like you, Russell. And now I kind of think they're all mixed in together, the evil and the good water. But, you know, what's beautiful about this is we can continue to ponder and we continue to learn as we read. Each time we read it, we're going to get something new and it's going to make more sense. So,
you know, as we talked about last time, that Satan was cast out of heaven, and where was he put? In the lovely Garden of Eden. What the heck, right? And so here we have the fountain of living waters and this beautiful tree of life. What's going on? What's going on is the laws that were irrevocably decreed before the world was. Gravity is here for a wise purpose. And the laws operate around that gravity. And for us to gain our experience and become as gods, we must understand the elements and the rules that are here. And we must manage that they might have joy. How can you know joy if you don't know pain, if you don't know suffering, if you don't know a withered tree, if you don't know a dry riverbed? That these are here for our good, for our understanding, for our growth and maturity and godness. And so when you have the bad water right there, we have to keep in mind it was designed that way and to not fight against it. Because what happens when you fight against a current? You die. You have to go with the flow, understand what its parameters are, and work within the light that God has given us that we can stay attached to by holding on to that rod. It was kind of where my mind went.
Excellent. That's a great analogy. I had an experience on Thursday. I'm part of this group. It's called Well Women. And, you know, it's a Facebook group of almost 1,000 women. And then there's a smaller group where we do like Motivational Mondays and we have guest speakers on Thursday. Jeannie attended one of the speakers last month. But anyway, I think the point is these are a group of just really dynamic women, like very successful women, women that have started this organization, and they do charity. They do charity events. They raise money for orphanages in the United States, and they do things overseas. And the woman who founded it is, she's a multimillionaire in doTERRA. And she's LDS, and she was inspired to start this group. And her purpose is just to bring women to Christ. And so the name Well Women is talking about the well, you know, that Christ, you know, the woman that Christ revealed himself to at the well. And she was relating that she went to go get a car recently, and she has just been so out of touch that she kind of purposely stays out of being in touch with a lot of things in the world because it is so negative. And she didn't realize that there was a crisis like with cars, you know. So she went to turn her car in, and they were super, super eager. And she kind of started going like, what is going on here? Anyway, the point is she ended up turning in her car, but she had to wait several weeks to get a new car. And so she was driving around in this like little old beater car that was like what her kids first drove. And, you know, it's rusted and old, and it's, you know, and she pulls into the driveway and her husband is like, oh, well, this must be like pretty humbling for you, you know, to be driving around in this car. And she just looked at him and said, I'm not defined by my car, you know? And to me, I was like, here is her husband who knows her and knows what an amazing woman she is. And he's so caught up in the world and the thinking of the world that his focus is on like, oh, you're having to drive this beater car around. And I think that to me, this is so much like how we're so like, Satan is so influence in our lives that like our thinking so much can be so negative about ourselves if we're comparing ourselves to the things of the world. You know, if we don't have a new car or we don't have the success or, you know, I don't know. I just thought that was really interesting how he said that to her. And because she has such a self, a love for herself and understanding her divine nature, that she was just immediately like, that doesn't define who I am. Anyway, so I hope that that made some sense. But Satan is just so, this water of, you know, because there's so much good and evil in everything. And that's why we have to be able to discern so much what is good and how we need to hold to the rod. Okay.
Thank you. When I reread this just now, Russell, in my mind, I see like the tree of life from coming from God, like here. And then I see Satan throwing his bad water in here. So just below that tree, and it's all going down this stream and we're down here. And so in my mind, they're just kind of mixed together, but so it's like, yeah. He does the good and then he does the bad.
Yeah, as I was rereading it, I thought of it in layers. The top of the water is good, clean, and then underneath that is a stream of filthy waters. The roots are getting into that underneath water.
Yeah, I thought of it that way too. So I think it can be either way, or however you think of it in your mind.
But that's an important point. Satan's wiles are the first that we pick up. Why couldn't the roots find the good water? I don't know why, but it was because the roots went, the bad water went right down to the roots, and so somehow it severed its connection with God and replaced it with something that they thought was good. The tree tried to grow with it, but turned out that it wasn't nourishing. But it's the first thing it picked up. It didn't struggle with trying to sort out the good and the bad. It just immediately went bad. So there's a parable in there, a lesson for our lives somewhere. But
Steve, what is your thought on this verse?
Still pondering it.
Okay.
I've read this many times and it still has a tendency to bring new thoughts every time I look at it.
I think let's read verse 11 too, because it kind of goes into a little more and brings in a little bit of what Brother Bob was trying to say about the roots and the dirty water. So and that'll be the last verse we read. We'll discuss it for a minute and then we'll call it quits, but I think I'll go ahead and read verse 11. The original olive tree, therefore, had grown old in its customs and traditions, and even though the streams of dirty water were mixed with clean waters, that is to say, feelings of all kinds coming from both sides, its roots were fed in such a way that its dirt appears in the fruits and also in the trunk, just above the earth, which prefigures the human heart. And thus, the sap of its essence was lost because of these precepts of the enemy as being a plague infesting its inner structure. So, and I just... for just prefigures means like represents. Would anyone like to comment on that in any of this verse?
I might mention one thing. I changed plague to pest infesting its inner structure. Of course, none of this makes a big change. I'm just saying what I did.
I guess to me is just kind of what we've been talking about all along, is that we need to make sure that we're digging, I would say dig down deep to the good water, and maybe it's not, maybe we need to be more shallow or whatever, but we need to really think about what we're taking into our hearts, because, you know, being in the world and in this fallen place with all the wickedness of Satan and all the bad feelings that surround us, it's a huge battle for us to focus on the good feelings. And so that's kind of what I get out of this, is that if we surround ourselves in those bad feelings, our heart's going to change and we are not going to produce good feelings. And so we need to be very careful and guarded of our hearts and guarded of the feelings of the people that are surrounding us, the media we take in, you know, exactly. I don't know. Any other thoughts?
This ties in a lot with what we were taught in the three Nephites earlier about when they're gathered and looking to, because it's, you know, it's a figurative filter, you know, looking for all those things that were of the gifts of rancor and anger, and to learn how to filter them out. I think, you know, this is just spelling out our need to do that, and where it takes you if you don't, and where we're at.
Thank you. And it really will become a plague, and it has become a plague in our world. These precepts of the enemy that have infiltrated into all areas of our lives, even into our churches, this plague. And so it's very important that we are watchful.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to ponder, and it's pretty heavy. I mean, I just, with my experience in the last several months with teaching children and these eighth graders, it's mind-blowing to me how easily they go to being negative about themselves. And, you know, I'm stupid and I'm this and I, you know, when I'm just like, no, you know, like it, Satan has got a hold so much on the psyche of all of us, you know? And that's why I related that story a little bit about that woman, Carol, where even her husband was like, oh, that must be really hard for you to drive around. Like, who cares about a stupid car? Are you kidding me? Like, you know, and I just love that she immediately said, my worth is not attached to a car. Like, are you kidding me? You know? And I think the more that we can try to understand our own divine nature and help other people to do that, the more it will give people the power to stay away from these waters, you know, to just, you know, it's, that's just a thing that just keeps coming to my mind, the importance of really helping people to understand their divinity and who they are. And, you know, and I mean, can you imagine if everyone walking around understood who they were, you know, it would just change the dynamics of our entire world and how we treat each other and the judgment and the pettiness and the hypocrisy and the self-righteousness and all that would just diminish. So anyway, I definitely want to take some more time to read and reread these and really ponder these verses, because there's a lot in here. I'm grateful to have it to study. Okay, I'm done.
All right, let's go ahead and I just want to thank everyone for participating in your thoughtful words. And I just love these discussions that help us learn and grow and draw nearer to our Heavenly Father. So thank you for participating, and we will see you next week. Let's go ahead and stop our recording.